Hey guys, this is Danny McDermott from The Danny McDermott Show. If you want to see our show live, it's every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Trust me, you want to see it then. You'll see all the screw-ups. It's great. Our show is an adult show, I must admit, but that's only because we're childish. Most of the guests that we have on the show are my friends, so you can just watch us hang out as buddies. It's fun. Just chill, relax, enjoy. Guys, welcome to the Danny McDermott Show. I appreciate you guys coming back. Thank you for all two of you. We really do appreciate it. Kevin. I just wanted to give a shout out to one of our writers, Carrie. She has been amazing, and she's driving back across the country. So I just wanted to give a shout out to her. Tell her we love her, and we're grateful for her being on the team. Okay, so I hope everybody had a safe and socially distanced Super Bowl Sunday. I don't know how the players do it, Kevin, you know, without worrying about getting COVID. You know, can you imagine if the players had the social distance during the game? You know, that would be a weird game, wouldn't it? I'd be paranoid imagining a spiral of COVID coming at me, you know. I'd have gloves made of sanitizing wipes sewn together, you know. Can you imagine trying to tackle people 6 feet apart? And remaining 6 feet apart. I mean, the huddle would take up half the field, you know, they're wearing two masks, you know what I mean? And trying to understand the plays, like, what did you say? Porterhouse steak? Oh, quarterback sneak. Yeah. That makes more sense. Yeah. Now that you yelled it out, do you think we should change it? Wait, you want to do a hooker on sabbatical? I think we should leave that talk for after the game. Oh, a hook and a lateral. Oh, okay. All right. You know what? Maybe we should pass around a notepad. Can you imagine that? So the Buccaneers, Kevin, what'd you think of the game, man? Tom Brady, the GOAT.
I couldn't believe my Buccaneyes.
Dude, the Buccaneers were all over the Chiefs like a pack of sea lions who stumbled in a penguin bathhouse. I mean, it was crazy. They couldn't do anything. There was nothing they could do. They were overwhelmed. And what about the halftime show by The Weeknd? What'd you think of that, Kevin?
I thought the show was all right. You know,
look at all these guys. It looks like they all had plastic surgery and didn't have time to heal before the halftime show. 100 guys in red jackets. They're dancing around in their daddies with their dad's tighty whiteys pulled over their faces. This shit is weird, man.
Well, it's more like the weekday than the weekend, but.
Well, I think we can all agree it was a weak performance. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't even see it. Happy post Super Bowl pre Valentine's Day show, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, nothing like a COVID Super Bowl Sunday to supplement the beer gut heading into Valentine's Day and romance.
Right? That's why you got to buy a good gift. So you got to get something that'll really woo her so you can work off those calories with Valentine's Day sex, you know? No gas station roses, guys. Plan it out. Plan it out. Okay. So it's been a crazy week. I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but the Texas Department of Public Safety had to apologize for an Amber Alert they released, which featured a photo of the killer doll Chucky from the 1988 horror movie Child's Play.
That's great. You should probably report that whether you see the Amber Alert for it or not.
They really released this. It was an accident. You know, they were sending a text message to subscribers, which described the perpetrator as a 3 foot one, 28 year old carrying a huge kitchen knife. Actually, Kevin, that kind of describes your ex.
No. She was never 28. It does describe this guy, though.
By the way, Kevin, it's also National Umbrella Day. Umbrella Day. Right?
I like it.
Rain or shine, we need to appreciate all that umbrellas do. For example, they keep everything dry but our feet, which is why tomorrow should be wet socks at work day. Have you ever dealt with that? Oh, my God. I did that once, and this is a true story. My socks were completely soaked, and I stole one of my coworkers' heaters that she kept under her desk, and I put my wet socks on it, and she caught me.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah, she was not happy. I said, I just put them on. They weren't a stinky all-day sock, you know? She still didn't forgive me. Also, they accent Kevin's fruity drinks. Kevin's fruity drinks. Kevin, come on. I'm ripping on you here.
That's
and right. And they help concubines look like shaded mimes.
It's poetry, Danny.
Don't they look like mimes, dude? Come on. They do. They don't speak, do they? Do they speak? I don't think they do. They just don't pantomime as much. They also provide Rihanna an opportunity to turn a three-syllable word into nine syllables. Under my umbrella, hey. I don't know. I did that wrong.
You totally parasoled me, Danny.
It's not my go-to karaoke song. Let me see if I can do it again. Under my umbrella, Ella, hey, I did it. There you go.
Yes, you did, Danny. Congratulations.
Did I totally parasold you on that one, Kevin?
You did. You did, and that joke has parasailed on out of here.
That's Mary Poppins of you, Kevin. So, all right. National Umbrella Day and Valentine's Day. Any plans, Kevin?
Yeah, now that football's over, I'm keeping the options open.
Okay. Dating is hard, but it's apparently not as tough as it is right now for A-list actor Armie Hammer. Look at this guy. He just was dropped by his agency, PR rep, and wife after some of his ex-girlfriends leaked text messages, including one which detailed how he would like to cut off one of the woman's toes and keep it with him in his pocket.
No, wait a second. That doesn't mean anything. He might be just a little weird, like Angelina Jolie used to walk around with the vial of the blood around her neck, or the underwear face guys you showed at the halftime show. It's a little weird, but a little weird is what's normal now.
No, Kevin, a body part isn't normally a keepsake, buddy, okay? It's a sign that you tortured animals as a child.
Yeah, maybe he really liked the girl. He wanted to carry around the piece of her for luck. Like a rabbit's foot, something like that. Now give this guy the benefit of the doubt here.
No. But then he sends a text and says, thinking of holding your heart in my hand and controlling when it beats. So now he's got his toe in her pocket. He's squeezing her heart in his hand. What's next? Her eyes on a dinner plate?
That could just be what he thinks of as romance, Danny. You know, it's a little freaky, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's a cannibal and he wants to eat her.
You're way too forgiving, Kevin, because in his very next text, he says this. I am 100% a cannibal. I want to eat you.
You know, it's that second sentence that convinces me he should remain alone.
And you know what? That explains a lot of your past relationships, Kevin, because the second sentence is what keeps a woman happy.
Not when it follows the first sentence, Danny. Now, quick question. Have you been grooming me to eat me eventually?
You know, I'm getting uncomfortable with the direction you think our relationship is heading.
Then it's doing just fine. That's what I wanted to hear.
How am I supposed to watch an Armie Hammer film now without thinking about him turning someone into a McRib? You know? And how am I supposed to eat a McRib without imagining Armie making love to it?
Well, instead of call me by your name, it's, you know, call me by your menu item number.
He's not picturing you on a stripper pole. He's picturing you on a rotisserie.
With pockets full of side dishes. you know, whatever you choose.
Oh, man. I'm going to stick with being craft singles. Thanks.
All right. Well, you know, you can tuck little condiments in the pockets, too.
There you go. All right. All right. We've had our fun, Kevin. We've had our fun. We've probably gotten rid of half the audience. So let's bring on our guest. Our first guest. He's a very interesting, super smart guy who is going to pull back. Let me see. There we go. He's going to pull back the curtain a bit and give us a sneak peek into the world of internet business.
All right.
Please welcome Jonathan Wally Weilbacher. Did I pronounce that last name right? I hope I did.
You 89% there. That's pretty good.
You want to clue him in on which syllable he went astray?
So every time I interact with a German human, I will always have to deal with this interaction because our family pronounces it Wallbacher, like a wall and a back that does. But that's not how it is. Actually pronounced it's like Weilbacher, like this, like that excess Germany-ness that you need to have in there. And I think my family, when they came to America generations ago, were just like, that's not going to sell in New Orleans. So they changed it to the pronunciation of Weilbacher, which then informs my nickname, Wally, which I've had most of my life. So
sure.
That's great, man. I had a nickname back in college. It was Hammered.
Getting there.
I was trying to open a door. It was the first night in the dorm room, and I was trying to open the door. I was so drunk I couldn't get the key in. And this guy looks at me. He goes, "Are you Hammered?" And I never heard that word before. And I go, "No, I'm Danny. Nice to meet you." So that became my nickname for 4 years of college. But you have a fascinating work history. Could you share with our audience some of the companies you've worked for and what you did for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for the past 10, 12-ish years, I've worked in the digital media space, predominantly through the platform of YouTube as a business and a media platform. But I've worked in and through basically any platform that audiences can gather. And audience growth has really been sort of the name of the game. And I've done everything in the space from making content to I worked playing video games at one point. There was a wannabe super entrepreneur who thought, you know, he was going to be the next Richard Branson. So he created a website that, you know, had some high lofty ideals, but he accidented into being smart enough to put like 12, you know, 20 somethings in a room and say, "Hey, just put video game videos on YouTube." And this was the early days of when YouTube was actually monetizable, and, you know, they had just brought out their partner program. And so there was a whole mess of us who, you know, cut our teeth on the digital media space. Literally, like my beat on the video game team was iPhone games. So like I was the guy that had to beat Angry Birds and record how you get 3 stars and put that on the internet for people to learn.
Dude, I've got PTSD from Angry Birds. I did. I'm not even joking. I played that game so much. I'm in bed with my wife staying up till 3 a.m. She's like, "Are you playing Angry Birds again?" And I literally, dude, I still have repetitive stress syndrome from that game. I want to sue those pigs.
I have deep-seated PTSD on Angry Birds. There's literally video somewhere on the internet. I don't think it's been deleted yet, but I will not help anyone find it otherwise. That's literally for a 6-hour stream of me trying to get 3 stars on a single level. And I failed. I had to close the stream down and come back the next morning and do it again because this was work. I couldn't stay there 24/7 until I finished it. And then like an hour into the next day, I finally did it. And like I was a kid with like principles and stuff. So I wasn't going to like go online and find someone else who beat it to figure out how they did it. I was like, I have to figure this out. If people trust my Angry Birds content. And so it was important to figure that out.
You had Angry Birds.
And I did. And there is proof of me going absolutely certifiably insane, not doing it, and then finally doing it. And there was like 20, 30 people in the chat room at the time who were following this epic quest. And it was great. We had a good time. But that sort of got me into the internet business, as you so eloquently put it. I took that moment, did a little victory lap around my mom, who said I'd never, you know, make a living playing video games, and then focused on the industry as a whole. And so I took a bit of sabbatical from work, went back to New Orleans and just studied internet video, web series, Blip TV was an old platform that was big on this stuff, Flash videos, cartoon stuff from like the early 2000s, and just trying to understand the philosophy of content creation. There was no philosophy, like trying to figure out what one could be because it was all so brand new.
It was like the Wild West back then.
It really was. And very much it was the Wild West in terms of like the whole Manifest Destiny Western expansion Wild West, where like everything was brand new. We're still kind of in the Wild West, but we're in that like late 1800s, Wyatt Earp, you know, when he's done retiring, he goes to Hollywood to be a cowboy consultant. Like we're almost to that next generational leap, but it's still technically the Wild West.
Cowboy consultant.
And that's kind of basically what the direction I went. So I took that time. I called that my like bachelor's in YouTubeonomics, where I just studied that for like 6 months. Came back to LA, started working for a company called Maker Studios. They eventually got bought by Disney for, you know, close to $1 billion in a really dumb transaction. But like, so they were one of the leading entities in the YouTube as a business world. They would take channels, sign them to a contract. All the money that would flow from YouTube flowed through that other company first and then redistributed to the channels. And the value that the channels would receive out of that was support. And that, you know, how can we make you better at YouTube? Can we get you brand deals? Can we get you sponsorships? So on and so forth. And that's where I, you know, basically got my master's in the internet space. And I got to watch some of the top YouTubers, you know, succeed and look at their back end and study, you know, the relationship between audiences and content and what was working, what wasn't, what was trending, what failed. And I was really able to create a solid idea about how to be good on digital media.
Is that what got you involved with Sarah Silverman?
That's like step two, and she was maybe step five. So like on the path down that road, I started working for another company who kind of poached me from Maker. It was another MCN. But what was cool about this one is they were also an actual talent management group. So like they managed Linkin Park and Slash and Martin wow. Lawrence and, you know, a lot of like real Enrique Iglesias. And so they had this real traditional entertainment mindset. And so when they saw the success we were having on YouTube on this like side, secondary part of the company, that secondary part of the company became the primary part of the company. And
I want to show you something.
Go ahead.
This wasn't even planned. You mentioned Slash.
Beautiful.
I have a Slash shirt.
Apparently on your lap.
And I happen to have my computer on my tiny little dresser in this crappy little apartment. So I just literally, you said Slash, I just opened the middle drawer and pulled out the shirt.
What's funny is Slash in real life is exactly like he is on that shirt. It's like the first time I saw him like down a hallway, I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Usually you expect to see famous people like more in like a normal mode when they're in, you know, like their manager's office or something, but no, he's 24/7 like that, at least from my limited experience.
That shirt is always ready to go. I could tell.
That was,
I couldn't believe you mentioned it. I couldn't
coincidence.
Believe
it.
Yeah. And you know, when you mentioned the $1 billion check for Disney, I feel a little bit better about $62 for a medium soda. No, they got to fund these things somewhere, and I'm thirsty.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's,
seems
that's
it awesome. Seems like it should happen.
So traditional entertainment meshed with the digital space. And so because of the connections at this management firm, we were able to pitch our services to like major entities. And the sort of like my first big win in the space. I flew out to New York, the first time I'd ever been in New York. I'm a South and West Coast guy, so I'd never been to New York before. It was like a whirlwind, you know, 36-hour trip, fly out the night before, wake up, go to 30 Rock, and I'm literally, you know, brought up to like the sixth floor. So like right at the hub of late night in NBC. And they sat us in a room and they said, pitch us what you'd do for Jimmy Fallon. And I was, we obviously prepared. It wasn't like a surprise for Alan. I knew that's what the pitch was. We put a lot of thought and effort into it, and we laid out a plan, and they hired us to transition him from the late night show to the Tonight Show. And we did the whole first year of YouTube strategy. And at the time, Fallon wasn't like the number one guy on late night in terms of like all these videos. He could hit a viral video, you know, because he had like that innate comic sense and all of the access. Like he wanted to do something crazy with a major celebrity, he could just ask, and oftentimes they'd do it. Right. But he didn't have any consistency. So there was no growing. Like Kimmel was bigger. Ellen is huge. Colbert and the Tonight Show or the Daily Show, all much bigger. So we went in and said, not only can we do this better, but we'll make you the number one guy in your space in 2 years. And we were confident on it, and we did it in 9 months. And you know, I'm not going to like credit for, you know, doing Full House reunions that get 15 million views. He certainly wouldn't have been able to grow at a consistent level had we not helped that team build the foundation there. And that really turned a light switch on for the rest of my career, that the work that we do with kids in their mom's basements who are just like creating YouTube content can be the same work we do for traditional people. Because it's all the same thing. We're all trying to grow audience. We're all trying to connect to people. And the digital media space democratizes who can do it, but it doesn't eliminate someone from being able to do it. So it just changes the game. Did a bunch of other stuff like that, interesting things, for the next couple of years. But then when I left that company, I came onto a comedy collective called Jash. Which is founded by Sarah Silverman, Tim and Eric, Michael Cera, Reggie Watts. We also did a bunch of stuff with like Doug Benson, Norm MacDonald, second billing to me on this show, Henry Phillips. We did a lot of really cool stuff. Basically YouTube, a few years before I got to Jash, decided that we're going to start giving money to talented creatives to get them onto YouTube. There's $1 million checks that they were handing out to like everybody. And all you had to do was be someone that could make a case that you could build an audience against that.
What about us?
If they were still handing out those $1 million checks, I would know exactly who to call on your behalf. I think they wised up that didn't quite work, because most of the channels, once that $1 million evaporated, they didn't build a business. So there was they couldn't keep doing it. And that's the big thing. Jash, you know, this comedy collective, they did build a business.
Yeah. You know what? We'll take a couple $100. That's fine. So you're with Sarah Silverman. Kevin, you're supposed to laugh at my jokes. You're fired. Are you alive, Kevin? Seriously.
Well, I wasn't going to reward that.
Sometimes you look like a statue.
I jump in when the show needs a joke. This show doesn't need a joke yet. I'll let you know, though. I'm lurking. I'm waiting. I'm waiting to bounce.
It's a compliment, man. Take it.
That reminds me of my ex-father-in-law. He used to lurk.
That's a little different, Danny.
You'd be in the room, and all of a sudden, he'd be like right here. You'd be like, oh! All right. Anyway, so Sarah Silverman, did you work directly with her, or did you explain what you, I know you're probably doing the same thing, building the brand, building the audience and stuff like that. Did you actually work directly with Sarah at all or no?
So very little in terms of direct, but that wasn't because like she was like a hands-off thing. It was more based on what Jash was trying to accomplish as an entity. It was founded obviously by those comedians, but on the business side, it was founded by people who are, you know, deeply connected to the talent side of the creative and part of the traditional industry. One of the guys was, you know, an EP on Kimmel's main show, so we had that connect to that world. And then the other guy was Daniel Kellison, who's an old Letterman writer who founded Jackhole with Kimmel and Carolla, and he's really good friends with Sarah and all those people. And his idea that was sort of part of the ethos of what Jash was doing was, we weren't going to come over the top and say, oh, that chair is funny, do this. Like, we were going to provide a safe harbor for funny people to come do stuff on a platform that they might otherwise find inaccessible. And so that's where we worked with Sarah. So she was really into it. She did a lot of really great stuff with us actively. It wasn't a passive relationship, like just share our name. And my role in a lot of that was helping generate as much audience towards her stuff on that YouTube channel as possible. And then also, because she's a very polarizing figure, help community manage and moderate some of the worst part of the conversations, which can bubble up on the YouTube a lot, and just to help sort of smooth it out. But she was of the talent, like, she supported the Jash experience a lot, and she did a lot, and I think the whole team felt very much like very seen by her when she was around, even if it wasn't like she was in the trenches with us, because she had a bunch of other stuff to do. There were other comedians that had more of a distance with it, but I was always very impressed whenever she interacted. She had the real sense of earnestness in the process that you really need. And surprise that she's so successful.
She was always a sweet person to me. I used to book her in New York. I don't even remember if she was famous yet. Because I used to book a lot of shows with, Bill Burr and all these comics are huge now, but she was always sweet to me. She was always I always liked her. And she, she really surprised me with how funny she was. I mean, when you put her in a comedy club, in a small basement comedy club where 60 people, and she really connected the audience, it was amazing. Real quick, I want to talk about something real quick, and we're going to bring Henry on it in a second with you. We don't normally do that, but we're going to do it this time since you guys know each other. You're a huge movie comic toy collector. Now, we have a segment after this, but I just want to talk about this for a quick second.
Absolutely. In fact, you have a Slash shirt. I have a life-size Baby Yoda just like on hand.
Life-size.
I'd say fully, like exactly how he would be, the real one, obviously.
That's what I was saying. I was like, you said life-size. I'm like, so we know exactly what size that life form would be?
Yeah, no, we got exact dimensions from Wikipedia.
It's a Toyota.
Yeah. Never before has that joke hit so perfectly, and it's actually a shame that more people aren't watching this right now for how perfect that was.
Don't encourage me.
Yeah, I'm a big nerd. I love I love that space. Like one of my favorite stupid factoids, like when I'm doing public speaking or something, sometimes like a moderator will ask me for a stupid fact to kind of break the ice, is I go to the long form movie marathons that play in movie theaters. And particularly in LA, I have access to the El Capitan, which is Disney's like movie palace. And so they do these incredibly elaborate marathons. The first one I did was an 11 movie Marvel marathon that led up to the second Avengers movie. And it was like every movie in a row. For like 30 hours, 36 hours or whatever. And then did all the Star Wars ones three times. We did the Star Wars one where it was like the first two trilogies and then The Force Awakens and then the second one and then the third one. So by the end of it, it was a 9-movie marathon. But the piece de resistance, the crowning jewel of the marathon experience, right before Avengers Endgame, they did all 22 Marvel movies that they had released in a row, 40 some odd hours, 2 full days. And I was front row, the happiest a person can possibly be sitting in there. It was such a magical experience that during that marathon, I actually matched with my wife on Match.com or Tinder.
What?
Literally, I'm like enjoying this thing, and like this beautiful woman like matches me. I'm like, okay, I'll talk to you later after I watch Iron Man. It turns out we went on a date shortly after. She was enamored with that level of nerdiness, and we hit it off, and now we're married.
That's amazing. That's very amazing. Nice.
It's a great Valentine's story for us.
Yes.
Yeah. I figured you got to bring out the aw shucks guns for.
All right. Now stay on here, Wally, because we're going to bring on a friend of yours, a friend of mine. I love this guy. He's a stand-up comedian. You may know him from the movie Punching the Clown. Brilliant movie. Or as John the Server Guy on HBO's Silicon Valley. Please welcome Henry Phillips. What's up, buddy?
You are muted, Henry. You got to hit unmute.
I can do it.
Well, there it is.
That was for good purposes.
There you go.
Guys, Wally, good to see you.
Hey, how you doing, Henry?
Doing great. You know, my my fond memory of the night that I met you was around were we around a fire or just a fire pit at the Jash Fest in Palm Springs or Indio or wherever that was, and it was just amazing. First and last annual Jash Fest, and it should have been more.
It was, Jash Fest, Palm Springs. That fire pit was hilarious because that was the sort of, it was like the Saturday night, and then there was still one more kind of day, but there was supposed to be like a big party for the people that are working on it. That was going to be Saturday night, and messages were crossed, wires were crossed or whatever. And so I asked Daniel, where is everyone going? And he said back to the hotel. That was the fire pit. Little did I know he meant like that's where a couple people were going. So me and someone else we're like, that's where the after party is. And then we just sort of show up and you get that moment of like, oh, should we be here? Well, no, we're here now. So we're going to enjoy ourselves. And so we all hung out for a couple hours by the fire pit under the stars in Palm Springs. It was actually really fun.
I think I had a bottle of something or other that I was swigging.
It was great. Knew what it was when you started swigging.
Yeah, yeah.
By the end, you forgot.
Yeah.
So, Henry, you and I met at the Improv, I believe, when I first moved to L.A. about 8 years ago.
That's right, yeah. And you came from New York, which is where I'm from originally. But I only did comedy there after I had already been doing it for years. But,
Yeah. Well, you immediately, it's funny because I mean, you hang out there, but you don't hang out. You didn't hang out there as much as a lot of other comics. You were doing a lot of road work. You were doing a lot of gigs and
I put in my time early, like in 90, maybe 95 is my first time that I performed there at the Improv. Bud Friedman, I used to be more of a coffee house musician, and I would go around to like the Highland Grounds was a big one. Genghis Cohen, there was a place called the Coconut Teaser and all these places and do music. And Bud Friedman saw me at the Genghis Cohen one night and asked if I could go open the show at the Improv. And I did. It went well, and that was just the beginning. And I looked around. I was like a kid in a candy store. I was probably 25 or 26, and I was like, this is amazing. You got Kevin Nealon hanging out with, like, Chris Rock in the corner there, and there's, like, the guy from the Mod Squad for whatever reason. You know, there was just the original Mod Squad. Like, it was just unbelievable. And I hung out there probably every night for about 20 years. And then I think by the time I met you, Danny, that was like 2013.
Yep.
It started waning a little bit just because I was getting older, but it's still a really fun place. I mean, not now, but it will be again.
Well, I learned really quickly that you were one of the most beloved comedians in LA from what you really were. Everybody respected you. You know, in fact, yeah, well, you know, come on, you're a likable guy. You're not one of those comics where that guy's a dick. You know, you're just not. You're just not.
Well, I'm not sure what to attribute that to.
Danny.
We've had pretty fun times over there, you know. People would just riff on something. I don't remember a lot of bad energy.
No, you've been very beloved by everyone. And you blew me away because I don't think it was that night, but it might have been a month later. You introduced me to Mike Judge.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are very good friends.
Well, he's a guy who likes to go out to places like that, too. We've done the Comedy Store and the whole situation, you know, the whole comedy circuit. Yeah, he's a regular down-to-earth guy, as I'm sure you know, because we've hung out there. But
you were nice enough to introduce me like one of the guys. And for those of you in the audience who don't know, he created Beavis and Butthead. He created King of the Hill and the movie Office Space. He's a legend, and he's
continued. Yeah, I met him, going back to what Wally was saying, I met him through Daniel Kellison, who is the one, you know, Josh. So,
blew my mind because you introduced me to him. I sat and talked with him for like a good 20, 25 minutes, just me and him. And I was like, wow.
Henry, you're a down-to-earth guy.
Yeah. He's a physicist, right?
I think, yeah. His original background was as a engineer, which, man, I'm so dumb. I don't even know what that is exactly. I think there's a lot of different types of engineers, but I don't know which one.
Yeah, there are.
But yeah, right now he's engineering success in the TV and movie business, so I get that. But
he really loves it.
Out of people too, because I mean, over the history of being there, like Rodney Dangerfield is probably one of the biggest sightings that I had there. You know, later in his life, but it was really a place where pretty high up there people would just sort of hang out and everybody just sort of felt comfortable. Maybe it's the comedy vibe that puts people in that place where they just, you know.
Yeah. I was blown away at the level of incredible talent that liked you. You know what I mean? That really genuinely liked you. And it was pretty cool. I felt grateful to become your friend. So, and then you did my podcast and I think a couple of my podcasts, but
I did the one at Molly Malone's.
Right.
And they got to open all this stuff up because I got to say, I'm not one of these guys who's like, you know, there's more people dying from the economy than the COVID or whatever. But all I am saying is that I really can't wait until they open stuff up because it really is such a memory of me. L.A. has always been like a playground to me. I mean, it's like Genghis Cohen. Okay, the show's over. Let's zip on down to the Improv and then let's go to Molly Malone's afterward. Oh, Canners, there's a band playing there. You know, it's like that's the heart of the city and we got to get that back, especially now that we Uber from one place to another. I just can't wait till everything comes back because it's been a little I'm having a lot of nostalgia lately. I'm just like, oh man, those were good times, you know. And they will be again.
They will be. It'll come back. So I want to talk about some of the stuff you're working on. Henry's Kitchen. You've been doing, how many years have you been doing that now?
That was, I think 2011. I did the Montreal Comedy Festival, and Wally will probably relate to this because I think it's a lot of your knowledge base is more modern. So I'm an old school, stand-up comedian, road comedian. Like guys like me usually are pretty far from what the younger or the kids are doing, you know, which is, you know, a lot of really smart stuff. I kind of did it by accident. And because it was that time in the early, like 2011, 2010, where it was a big mystery. How do you get a viral video? And as we learned eventually, it's not really something that you try to do. It's something that just sort of happens to you. And so I was in the Montreal Comedy Festival and I was pushing the independent movie and also my comedy. And I'll be honest with you, it was really depressing. I mean, you just talk about being a small fish in a big pond. You know, I did a show one night with like everybody was on the show. It was like Dr. Ken and Craig Robinson and, you know, every single person was a huge name. They're all great people. But I remember the next day looking at the reviews for the show, trying to find my name in there. And they didn't even mention me. And I was like, sucks. That just hurts.
Oh, that sucks.
Anyway, I came back from Montreal feeling pretty down, and I was watching, I was single, I was going through a breakup, and I was watching a lot of these YouTube videos to learn how to cook, and I was just, I couldn't stop cracking up by seeing these, this overflow of middle-aged guys, like, in their attic or something, trying to teach people how to make chili and stuff like that. So I was like, I gotta start making these. So I made one, a French toast video, and I sent it to a friend of mine, Chris Fairbanks, and I said, hey, don't show this to anybody, but I think this is a funny idea. And then he instantly just shared it with everybody he knew, because he just got so swept up. He's like, everybody's got to see this, you know, without even, you know. I said, no, wait, I'm still working on it. So then I did another one. The second one, Henry's Chili for One. And then that one went viral, and Sarah Silverman tweeted it,
It
got edit and all this other stuff. And it was so fun for me to sit there and look on my phone at the time, just seeing the views just go up by the tens of thousands, and the comments. I was getting death threats for the first time in my life. It's so really exciting. Oh, people were calling me all kinds of, this guy's a serial killer. This guy's, you know. Those are the kind ones. But this is really happening. And it was like, you know, several hundred thousand views. And so then I was like, well, maybe. So I still wasn't in that zone of, well, this is what I'm going to do for a living. I was still doing the comedy. But over the next few years, there were some specific moments. I would be at the airport, and I was getting recognized by not the people that normally would be like watching Comedy Central or something like that. It was like a businessman with a briefcase or something like that saying, hey, my kids showed me your video or whatever. And then people started showing up to my shows that just knew the guy teaching cooking on YouTube. And they had no idea I had this whole career that I, you know, that I was doing before that. And so that's when I was like, well, this is something I can really do. And then once COVID hit, I was like, well, this is going to be it. So I do it on Patreon, which is great because you have, and I also did through Jash, we did the Henry's Kitchen Masterclass, where I went to New York and shot those. That was a lot of fun. And I mean, it's basically a career now. And I started a new web series called The Highwayman, where I'm a guy who tries to help people that are stranded on the road. And I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Let's show a clip. Let's show that clip. Okay. I gotta show that clip. It's so funny.
Jake Evans was an architect and an everyday citizen until a freak accident caused him to experience highly unusual levels of lower back pain. And he was forced to live on long-term disability insurance.
Jake was driving on a bridge one night. He saw a lady taking her own life. But first she handed him a box and said, you've got to give this to Dr. Wilson. And that day forward, Jake was traumatized. He knew somehow he had to make things right. And so he wanders helping people in need, and he goes by the name of the Highwayman.
The Highwayman.
Highwayman, keep on doing the best you can, helping people all across the land. I love you, Highwayman.
It's trying to be like a throwback to those shows from the 80s, like, Highway to Heaven, kind of The Incredible Hulk, $6 million.
I saw The Incredible Hulk because you were doing this with the box.
Yeah. I love that stuff. And so it's just I have no idea what it's trying to be, but it started out as like he's trying to help people on the road and he sucks. And then it started turning into he finds a secret box from the government, and it turns out to be a jetpack. So he's jetpacking around everywhere. So I've done like 60 episodes at this point.
I love this about your humor. Your humor is like with the cooking thing. It's so deadpan, and you're basically making fun of these people, but you're really sticking with the deadpan and you're pretending to be real, but it's obviously you're not because of what you're doing and what you're saying, but it's that's what's so good about it.
I've always like, well, Spinal Tap was the first one, right? Like where you're like,
oh, yeah.
It wasn't like watching a comedy movie about a band that sucked. It was like a band that sucked. It was like they were actually being that for your enjoyment, you know? And I just love that, you know, that was just the greatest to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's your deadpan delivery. And it's the same with this. You're playing, you're doing a show. That's basically a
bad show.
Yeah, yeah, you're making fun of these shows in such a funny deadpan way. I mean, the expression on your face is so serious. It's like, when you see those bad commercials with the people who own the company. And that's good. Yeah.
I just love that kind of humor. And I've never been, there's so many different types of talents in the entertainment. And the one that I never had was either someone who could do characters really well or someone who could hold a product up and smile and sell a product. You know, I could never do either of those things. I can only do this kind of nervous, dumb guy walking through life. And that's what I did on Silicon Valley as well. And yeah, as long as it's that one thing, I'll do it. I'll do it.
I think it's great. I really do. I love it. I mean, you've really nailed it. I mean, and it's just an awesome way to do comedy.
Thanks, Danny. And yeah, to tie back into what Wally was saying, it's like we are democratized now because in back in the 90s when I was doing comedy at the Improv, well, for one thing, if you're in LA, that whole idea of doing comedy on the road is sort of a foreign concept because it's going to require air travel, and the only way you're not going to get booked and have somebody cover your flight just not knowing you. So it's really hard to break into. But I started looking around going, okay, so it looks like my choices are either get on a TV show, a network TV show, or just do shows in bars for $100 a night. I mean, those were really the two options, honestly. I was lucky enough to have comics bring me out on the road. Eventually was able to get a career that way. But what we have now is you can make your own movies, TV shows, podcasts. You know, it's like we can do everything, and it's so much more fun than it was back then. You know, I mean, it was fun back then for different reasons, but it's so much more. You can be a part of the business now.
Yeah. And the great thing about it is, you know, anybody can create a show.
Yeah.
And anybody, you know, and you really capture that early on. You saw these regular people creating these shows who are just terrible, like terrible on camera, you know.
And there's still some that I really laugh at all the time.
Oh, dude. My buddy in New York, he watches all these videos about woodworking. And some of these guys, oh my God, they're so boring. They're so bad. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the way they try to do camera work to try to make a joke, you know, they do a horrible zoom or a horrible, you know, zoom in or a horrible, whatever. Or their wife comes in and goes, I think that too, honey. You know?
Yeah, there's a video called Who Needs a Movie, which is just one of the best. Do you know which one I'm talking about, Wally? It's two people who actually, turn out to be from the same hometown as my wife's from. It's Kelowna, Canada. And they're local celebrities up there. But yeah, their video went viral for all the wrong reasons. So yeah, watch that one. It's fantastic.
Well, we had a segment that we want to do with both of you guys right now. This is kind of like we have this segment where we have failed things, and it can be failed music, it can be failed anything, but this is what we wanted to do with you guys today. Ready?
Okay.
Failed Valentine movie titles.
All right. So what we did was you realize, but the original titles for movies, when they're thinking of titles, sometimes they had really bad titles, and you only know the good title. So what we've done is we've done our research. We've gone back and found the bad titles of these movies that were, thank goodness, rejected. So let's start with number one. Okay, When Harry Met Sally. Okay, everybody knows that movie. Everybody knows the title. It's a great title. It's a perfect title for the movie.
Perfect.
But before that title, they had another title that did not work. When Sally had an orgasm over a sandwich.
Descriptive.
<It's called> nose.
It's a good YouTube title instead of a movie title, because you get the hey, there's a girl in this, she's gonna have an orgasm and food. These are important parts of the YouTube algorithm.
It sounds like a time saver. You have the lovemaking and the snack, but at the same time, instead of stretching it out.
And people want to see that in a 12-minute YouTube video form. So yeah, that's.
Hey guys, we'll work with you.
It's true.
Let's do it. All right, next one. You've Got Mail. Okay, you know what's funny? As we were going through these, I realized that almost every great like romance movie involves Meg Ryan for some reason. But this is the title that you all know. But before this, the title wasn't that great. I hate you in real life, but you make me horny via email.
It's too long.
It's a story I've heard a billion times.
TLDR, as the kids say. Too long.
Yeah. Usually with me, it's like, oh, they like me right away, and then they fall out of love with me during texting.
Yeah.
With me,
it's the second time.
With me, it's I hate you in real life, and nothing in your email changes that.
Right. All right. Next one
about that title, though, is it went unused, and therefore, when they make a feature film about Tinder, like it doesn't. I think that's generally how it is. Like, oh, I like you in this, but then as soon as we start talking, not so much.
Right.
So I think it has a chance to come back.
That title, exactly.
Either that or on a T-shirt.
If you can fit that many characters,
front and back, you're gonna have to do like the turn.
Yeah.
All right, A Star is Born. Everybody knows this. This has actually been remade what, two times, three times?
More than that. It's been a few times. Yeah.
I think so. Four.
You think four times? Okay. Yeah. Well, the original title was nowhere near as good. Let's see if this singer can act.
It's more of a description, really, than a title.
I think they were talking about it, and somebody accidentally wrote it down as a title, but it was almost the title.
Well, it's true, because also Christopherson, right? He was in the other one.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there was one before that.
Streisand, was she with Christopherson?
Yeah.
That was the Christopherson one, and the other one was in the like it was black and white. It was way back in the day.
Right, the really old one. All right, next one. Okay, Brokeback Mountain. God, there's so many jokes. I feel like this is going to be hack.
No pressure.
I mean, how can you do another title that's not hack? Was originally your mounting broke my back.
Yeah.
Okay, call an injury attorney.
That would have been a much different movie if he actually broke his back during the movie. All right, next one. Titanic. Now, I know someone who works with James Cameron. And so this is how we got this information. Gilbert Grapes Got Hot.
Wait, but he wasn't Gilbert Grape. It was Johnny Depp that played Gilbert Grape, right?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Well, yeah, but he was in it, right? He was.
Yeah. Okay. I'm reading too much into it. Sorry.
Know, that may very well have been what spurred them to change it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. The Marston people said
they're like, wait a minute, he wasn't Gilbert Grape. We got to change the title.
This is factually incorrect.
I assume DiCaprio's character in that movie, the last name must have been Grape because they were brothers, but I don't remember what his first name was.
Of Wrath?
Pear. It was Pear Grapes.
All right, next one. How many we got? I think we got eight. Gone with the Wind.
No, I'm just
Gone with the Wind, one of the longest, greatest movies ever made. I actually saw it in the theater when they brought it back to the theater, I think in New York City at one point. All right, so there was a great movie. Originally, the title wouldn't have worked. I love you, but this racism is hard to ignore. That's the last
it's actually
thing.
What you have to type in HBO Max when you want it to come up. Like if you type in Gone with the Wind, it doesn't come up. But if you type that in, you actually can watch the movie.
Right?
It was woke before it was hip to be woke.
You know what, Wally? I would probably just put in the word ignore because I don't think that there's any movie that's ever been made with the movie ignore or with the word ignore in it.
There you go.
That's a very real point. I can't think of anything.
No, that's wow. That's just good marketing right there, Danny. Yeah. Who's the genius who thought of that?
There's Regarding Henry. There should be a sequel Ignoring Henry, but they never made that one. So I don't know.
Well, I'm glad we're recording this so we can steal all these ideas.
Oh, yeah. Right.
It's next preserved one. For posterity.
Next one. 50 First Dates. What a, you know, that was a very, very romantic movie. Yeah, but it wouldn't have been quite as romantic if the original title was used. 21st Dates and 31 Night Stands.
I think the original title was I'm Taking Care of My Mom with Alzheimer's and You Won't Believe This Shit.
All right, Kevin, that wasn't in the script. You know,
I took a chance, Danny. I'm a risk taker and you can't stop me.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
You know, that's it. Bad joke is better than no joke at all.
That's the problem with live TV. Kevin can just say shit. All right, next one. The Shape of Water. That was a beautiful movie. One of the special effects guys might even work on my movie if we ever get it done, which we will. But this was a way better title than the original title, which was You're Not the Merman I Ordered, But We Both Like Hard-Boiled Eggs.
If you were going to name evenings like paintings, that sounds like a woman's drunken regret.
That's right.
You know, I'm really interested in the mindset of the human being that wrote the first draft of that script and titled it You're Not the Merman I Ordered, But We Both Like Hard Boiled Eggs. What is that person's psychology that he was like catchy?
Yeah, maybe he was with somebody. They were starting to make an egg salad, and about halfway through, they were like, you know.
All right, let's keep going here.
We're thinking out of the box, that's for sure.
That was it, Danny. I think we may be approaching time for everyone's favorite segment.
Yes, everyone's favorite segment. This guy is rewriting Green Fried Tomato Notes. I'm going to keep busting on him about that. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. He's actually going to rewriting that script, and he works for South Park as an animator. He's a great guy. Please, let's start Anthony's segment.
What movie recommendations do you have for aquatic horror?
What's up, everybody? How you doing?
Hey,
welcome.
Nice to meet you, Henry. How you doing?
Yeah, is this segment in with me taking my shirt off at the beach? Is that the aquatic horror? Is this a prank on me? What's going on here?
There's a lot. I got to tell you, this is probably the biggest segment we've had, and it's funny because this is the sub genre of horror, and it's like I got a lot of movies. So hopefully, you have like 2 days.
I'll get out of the way. Go.
Well, so aquatic horror is a, aside from a few films, and I say like maybe even a couple, it's really overlooked. But we're going to start very quickly with the most romantic film of all time, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Hey!
If you're going to kick off the aquatic horror, you got to start with this. That's it.
Now, Adrian Barbeau, right?
I'm sorry?
Is that Adrienne Barbeau?
Or am Negatory, I sir, but she's on the list. She's coming.
Okay. I like some of the
I'm mixing something up.
Oh, yeah.
Was The Shape of Water influenced by that movie?
100%. I think Del Toro and Wally, please chime in if you hear anything. Anybody as well. Del Toro has a massive like love affair with Universal Monsters. In fact, he almost had a shot to curate their library, and it just didn't work out. Is that correct, Wally? Do you recall that?
Yeah, I mean, he was so far as to he was going to even start remaking those movies, but they could never get the deals right on it. And so he was like, I'm tired of waiting. And he made Shape of Water as a way of basically making a Creature from the Black Lagoon film.
Yeah, and then they're like, no, please come back, come back. He's like, nah, I got other things to do.
I won Best Picture with this. I don't need you.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so moving forward, we're gonna skip many decades and just go right to the first blockbuster. Boom. Aquatic horror of all time in space is literally this one. Everybody's seen it, and if you haven't, it's streaming. Go get it. Get it on Blu-ray. It's a hell of a movie. In fact, it's probably one of the best popcorn thrillers of all time. That's just my opinion.
Well, it puts it really put Spielberg on the map. That was the big one that really – amount of money they made on that movie was insane.
Oh yeah, in fact, I mean that movie like almost was the plug was going to be pulled 2,000 times, and I can't imagine what cinema today would look like. I mean, some wunderkind would come around and take it in a good direction, but like I can't imagine what cinema would look like today had it not happened.
It'd be totally different.
There's some people who say right now that they wished it never happened, but you know that's another
really
segment. Oh, of course, they said it ruined cinema.
Wow.
Yeah. But
I disagree. Exactly.
The first summer blockbuster.
100%. Yeah. So right. We're going to skip right to John Carpenter's The Fog.
Oh, starring man.
Adrian yes. Barbeau.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Now, this is the most atmospheric movie, I think, in the whole recommendations that I've got. Unfortunately, some of the optics don't translate to today's audience, but it's still atmospheric. It's still a great story. Some really fantastic camera work. The end. Jamie Lee Curtis is awesome.
Dean Cundey, I know that. Dean Cundey was the DP.
Oh, God bless him. Yeah, yeah. In fact, actually, Janet Leigh makes an appearance. Jamie Lee Curtis's mom makes an appearance in the film. So it's kind of like cool to see the family affair.
Oh, wow.
In 1989, there were six movies that were released. Now, remember our last segment? We had Deep Impact and Armageddon, right?
Yes, yes.
Everything was like duplicating each other. Well, 1989 murders that segment because Leviathan, The Abyss, Deep Star 6, Evil Below, Lords of the Deep, Endless Descent. These are all aquatic horror films.
Wow.
Yeah. And you only heard of three of them.
Not only just aquatic horror films, most of those are let's go to the lowest part of the ocean and have aquatic horror films.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
It is tightly connected.
Well, if you're going to look for a horror in the deep water, you're going to look for the deepest water where nobody's ever been to find those monsters, right?
Or you could just go to the beach like a normal human being.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And watch Kevin.
And watch Kevin. So
now we're back to aquatic horror.
Deep Star 6. Okay. Not to be confused with Deep Space Nine. Deep Star 6,
right?
Which really should have been called Deep Star 60 Minutes Until Something Fucking Happens, because this movie sucks. I hate to say it. Everybody in this movie is awesome, but this movie is a skip-worthy, hard skip-worthy film. Boom. Done.
Deep Six that box.
Yes. Now, Leviathan is what you want. In fact, no, I gotta give Deep Star 6 a little credit because they didn't have the budget Leviathan has. And I do like the cast of Deep Star 6. But Leviathan gets right to it. It's a little clunky in terms of some of the effects. It's a Stan Winston feature, so the effects are pretty fucking good. Mm-hmm. But it becomes a man in the suit at the end, which doesn't really, you know, compete against, like, The Abyss. You know, you're really not. And yeah. So Leviathan, at the end of the day, it's a good fucking movie. So there you go.
All right.
There's more. No. More. No. I'm going to bore you guys forever more.
This now, is halftime.
Dude, where's the weekend?
Wearing tighty whities on their face.
Oh, nicely done. Nicely done.
Well produced.
Well produced. Oh, you know what? I'm gonna just hook this up real quick. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So there's a movie in 1990 called The Rift, okay? By the director of Pieces, a horror film. Is it good? Not really. Is it worth looking at once in your life? It is, while you're folding laundry. So just a heads up. So we're going to skip to like basically the late 90s. Boom. Anaconda. Wally and I watched this probably fairly pretty recently, as a matter of fact. And
yeah, a couple months ago.
You're not going to really like do better than two villains in a film. You got an anaconda that wants to murder and squeeze everybody. And then you got John Voight.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got Jennifer Lopez.
Of course, but like in turn, you got Jennifer Lopez, you got Ice Cube. I mean, you got the dude from Jumanji who played Robin Williams' abusive father. I mean,
I feel like that movie has three villains though, Anthony. You have the snake, you have John Voight, and you have John Voight's accent. Jesus Christ, how you were able to even talk about that movie that long without bringing it up is commendable to your commitment to the bit.
Yes.
What was his accent? What was he doing?
Yeah, what was he supposed to be?
Vaguely south of Texas. Yeah, like literally all of the world. If you take everything south of Texas and put it into one accent. So a lot of like Hispanic, South American, French, for some reason. I think maybe Eskimo. Yeah, it's a little bit everywhere.
Inuit, sir.
Ah. Yeah. That's hilarious.
It's a hell of a movie. It totally holds up. We had so much fun watching this shit. And in fact, we threw it on as like a goof. No disrespect. But we're just like totally watching it.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was fun.
I know a lot of young guys wanted to watch it because of Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You can't deny it.
Like, she was like, sure that anaconda could kill a 400-pound man, but can it encircle J-Lo's ass? I don't know.
Kevin, God bless you, man.
Well,
you gotta watch to find out.
If it did, it certainly wouldn't be able to squeeze it.
Not without coming back for seconds.
No. What do we got? Is this the baby bird scene?
Oh, let's hear this.
I'm getting the hell back to LA. It's always good to be prepared.
It's good to be prepared.
He sounded like Scarface.
He's trying to do Scarface. Yes, he is.
He did. He sounded like Scarface.
Yeah, it's pretty poor. But what's not pretty poor is fucking Deep Rising, dude. This movie's awesome, dude. Steven Sommers, who went on to do the Mummy fame. And, dude, if you want to do a drinking game where every time Treat Williams says, now what? You're going to be pretty drunk by probably the midpoint. You're going to be at least nicely buzzed. Yeah. But this movie is a hard monster movie with Famke Janssen and a slew of other awesome characters. You really can't beat it, though. It's a super fun popcorn flick. It's not the definitive popcorn flick, but it's a good one. So,
well, I'll tell you, you said now what? Is it, dude, isn't that – that's exactly how you write any horror film or any or any action film, because everything goes wrong one by one. Now what's going to go wrong? What's going to go wrong? Now.
Also, as long as Treat Williams' voice is in your head saying, now what? You're good. As you're writing. Yes, you're good.
What was that, Henry?
It's kind of a weak catchphrase for a tough main character. Now what? Like, it sounds like you're expecting somebody else to be doing something, you know?
You know what? It's a good point. It's a good point, because he's so inconvenient, as opposed to like a dude like Arnie in Commando. He'd be like, what do you got? What do you got? You know? But now what? I was about to have a cigar.
I think Urkel could have pulled that off.
No, yeah. you know what character that catchphrase was made for, though? It's clearly the Highwayman.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. It's come full circle.
I like it. But I will say, as good of a popcorn flick as it is, it's not the best popcorn flick for aquatic horror. Deep Blue Sea. Okay, this movie is criminally underrated. In fact, I think it gets clowned. And I got to say, it fucking holds up. It really does. Some of the effects might be like, okay, fine. I'll forgive a frame or two regardless. But it knows what it is. It's smart about it. And it's as cliche as some of it can be. I mean, dude, you fucking eat LL Cool J's bird, you're going to get served. Deep Blue Sea. What do you got, Wally? I know you like this one.
No, this movie is like the best. I mean, obviously proving that we all messed up as a society not making Thomas Jane an important action star. That's a big thing. This was also the film famously that Samuel L. Jackson just gives a really rousing speech about survival and then immediately a CGI shark pops in and kills him. Deep Blue Sea.
No, I got to say, let me chime in real quick. I wished what Sam Jackson did, I wished Steven Seagal did for Executive Decision. But in fact, he was killed in 2 minutes. I'd rather him have like a super speech and then he was killed, 45 minutes in. But I'm bringing it to action now. So in Executive Decision, Steven Seagal was top billed because he was like the hottest actor. But it was really a Kurt Russell movie. And this is the first time I felt cheated. I was like kind of a kid at the time. I saw it in the theater. I'm like, yeah, Steven Seagal movie. And I'm watching it with my dad. And within 2 minutes or whatever the fuck, he gets killed. And I'm like, is he coming back?
Right.
Not only that, too. Executive Decision is a movie about, it's like pre-Air Force One. There's like there's an issue with the president in a plane. Mm-hmm. So they send like a squad of Hyperman awesome action heroes to like get into the plane with like a crazy jet, you know, entrance. And all this is happening. You're getting Steven Seagal's the lead, and he's kind of like doing the barking the orders, making sure everyone makes it on the plane. And then like immediately at the crescendo of the action scene, right as he's about to like make it the last in on it, and then everyone like has that big applause moment at the end of the first act, the plane underneath it like just blows up or gets sucked out, and he just like almost like a cartoon gets like whooshed out of the airplane, never to be seen or heard from again, just fallen unceremoniously to his death and out of nowhere. And so like the kids in the movie who are expecting, because exactly like Anthony said, it's a Steven Seagal film. It's like, imagine, you know, they're making an Iron Man movie and Robert Downey Jr. is in all the advertisements, and 2 minutes in, he's gone, and then it's all about, you know, Don Cheadle.
Jamie Kennedy. It's something, you know, just like something different. Yeah, no disrespect to Kurt Russell, but yes.
Yeah. Well, they've done that a few times. It was like with Godzilla and what's his name from Breaking Bad?
Eddie Murphy in Best Defense.
Bryan Cranston.
Yeah. He died like in, you know, I was looking forward to seeing
him. Hey, I haven't seen it yet. Come on.
6 year old, man.
Yeah.
I saved you some time.
So in the last segment, I spoke about people spoiling shit 40 years, you know, later. Wally and I have seen thousands. Hold on, I pointed wrong. Well, Jesus Christ. Wally and I have seen thousands of movies together. And when we agree, we wholeheartedly agree. When we disagree, people will leave the room because this guy and I are so passionate about our viewpoints. But yes, I probably had enough time to watch the Cranston version of Godzilla.
Not worth it.
Can I put a capper on Deep Blue Sea, though, for a second? Right. Because just like one of my favorite things ever about this movie. The main theme, like the theme that plays as the like helicopter pans out and you see the ever smalling main heroes, and then the credits come up.
Directed by Rennie
Harlan. Literally sounds almost exactly like the main theme from Shrek, like from a couple years later. And what happened is
you're not Smash Mouth.
It's not Smash, like the actual score from Shrek. Yeah. What happened was, in Deep Blue Sea, they asked Trevor Rabin, the composer, to just do a general Hans Zimmer sound for the score. And so, like, he took elements from all of that. And then Shrek was written by Harry Gregson-Williams and John Powell, who are proteges of Hans Zimmer. So, like, they got it from a different place. But then it all came together where then they both kind of sounded almost exactly the same because it, like, they were the sum of their inspirations, which were kind of the same. And like, it wasn't like the composers were different. It wasn't like they were friends or anything. I'm sure they're nice to each other, but like they were two separate entities within that's 99 on Deep Blue Sea and Shrek's 2001. So like in a 2 or 3 year period, these two scores were coming, and just like, that's one of my favorite little weird coincidences of art, is that like, it's one thing to see it, two films get made that are the same thing. Like that makes sense because you understand a lot of people have to make those decisions. And at some level, someone's like, yeah, let's, you know, shit in the Cheerios of someone else. But when it's two like smaller cogs of the larger machines having creative impetus based on how they're doing it, and then they end up sounding the same, it's just, it's compelling and it's interestingness. And I that's my favorite little factoid about Deep Blue Sea. So you're welcome for having to deal with it for 2 minutes.
No, that's beautiful. No,
it's kind of similar to Vanilla Ice and the song Under Pressure.
A little bit.
Same situation, exactly. down to the humming on national TV.
Yeah. I got to say, I actually skipped, unfortunately, because I didn't, I have to admit it, I don't have the tape and I feel really bad. I'm going to rectify that very quickly. But within aquatic horror, I can't overlook Piranha. There you go. All right. You know, Susanna was all on point. I wasn't. God bless. Piranha, directed by Joe Dante. Actually, Steven Spielberg thought this spoof of Jaws was so fucking awesome. He, what did he do? He gave him Gremlins. He actually watched Joe Dante's career. He ended up doing The Howling in 81. And they met, I think, during the Twilight Zone anthology, where Joe Dante had a bit, and so did Spielberg, which led to Gremlins and everything else, Inner Space, and so on and so forth.
Oh, dude, Joe Dante, some of his movies are my favorite movies of all time. I mean,
You know, he knows what he's doing. And Wally, we met the dude, and like I said in another segment, he was like the nicest guy. He just likes movies, you know. He has no children. His children are his movies, and he's very good at what he does. And I think studios should fucking throw money at that guy, because he has a hard time raising money now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my movie, the Reaper movie, Vincent Guastini.
Yeah, Facebook pal, but yeah.
Yeah, he did the special effects for a bunch of movies, big movies, and he knows Joe, and he read my script, and he wants to show it to Joe at some point, but not until we get the full money. But yeah, that's pretty cool, man. I can't believe – I didn't know he did that movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, he was spoofing fucking Jaws. He was working for Roger Corman at the time, like fucking Piranha. The end. Perfect spoof. Awesome. Even though they took it seriously.
Yeah, it's really funny too, because you normally, when you think about, you know, James Cameron, you know, directing the sequel to a classic horror film, you know, directed by legendary director, you go to Aliens. But Piranha 2 was actually James Cameron's first, one of his first like directoral efforts. And Piranha 2 actually was my first introduction to not just the Piranha verse, but also like the whole like indie B movie, like off the beaten path scene. Cause as a kid, like it was playing, you know, at 10 o'clock on HBO, and I should not be watching HBO past 8. So of course I'm going to watch whatever's on at 10 o'clock at HBO. And you start to like get excited about it. And so it's a stupid B movie, but it's Piranha 2. And digging into it. Yeah. Cameron, it was his, That was his sort of shot that a lot of people started to look up and say, yeah, we need to give this guy some bigger projects.
100%. Could not have said it better. The name escapes me, but there was another sci-fi movie that Corman did earlier where Cameron was working on the effects side, and he ended up leading that team.
And like that's Beyond the Stars or something like that.
I think that's what it is. Exactly. Yeah. And
okay. Sorry. Go ahead. No, it's okay. I was just we're running a little long. I just want to make sure we don't go over time.
I did want to bring up a movie.
I see 400 people watching right now. Do you want to cut them off of this awesomeness? I mean,
no, keep going.
Yeah, come on, man.
Somebody's doing this show from a lighthouse.
If anybody's got obligations, beat it. We're gonna continue. Shit, all good. I get it. We all have lives. I'm joking. I don't want to get chastised. No, dude. So, Cameron, Piranha 2, The Spawning. I think it was 82, 83. God, probably 82. Basically, piranhas and grunions get together. They mate, and then they start flying. And they fucking murder people at a tourist resort. It's awesome. But it's not really a good movie. But it's awesome.
It's like Sharknado without the tornado.
It really is. Like that's where that the lineage of that stuff comes from.
It's another aquatic horror. So okay, so we're gonna skip forward to just to end the segment with the more recent aquatic horror entries. Susanna, do you have any in the mix that you can put on the screen? Otherwise, boom, Crawl. I gotta say, I was gonna end with that, but Crawl is the best latest aquatic horror. Right now, you can totally get this on streaming. It's from Alexander Aja, the French director who did the remake of Hills Have Eyes, which is true horror, in my opinion. He also did High Tension, also known as originally Hot Tension. What else did he do? Dude, well, you're going to see an image in 5 seconds. He did the remake or reboot of Piranha, which was super fucking gory. Yeah. I think Wally and I probably saw that together. as we see everything together. But yeah,
The Crawl was actually a very surprisingly entertaining movie.
Oh yeah,
but I couldn't help but laugh at when he got his arm torn off, and then he still lasted most of the movie. It's like, and he's not even, he's like, if I got my arm torn off, I think I'd be screaming pretty much 100% of the time. And he's still talking. He's like, oh God, let's get out of here.
Here's what's crazy about this movie. And this is a hard
spoiler. No painkillers, no painkillers. You know what
I mean? Can't prove that.
What a privileged environment. If you're like getting murdered by sharks or alligators or this or that, or flying piranhas, you're like, hold on. Where the fuck are the painkillers? Like, no one's thinking about that. But I will say this. If anybody has not seen Crawl, step away for 5 seconds and then, of course, come back. I've seen the movie now 5 times, okay? And I never remember if Barry Pepper, the father in the film, because it's basically a hurricane coming in on the Florida coast and a girl trying to save her dad who's in the basement. Not even right. that, the crawl space
right.
of the house underneath. So it gets flooded.
Yeah.
And I've seen it 4 or 5 times, and I never remember if Barry Pepper lives, which is a testament to the fucking movie, or I'm an idiot. There's somewhere between that. But yeah, I'm like always surprised. I'm like, he fucking lived? It's because he gets so jacked up in the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But the there's way, other films.
Where what I got Adrienne Barbeau, she was in Swamp Thing in 1982. That's what I was thinking.
100%. Nicely done. I would say biological mutation horror. However,
yes, but Swamp Thing is 100% an aquatic hero.
Yeah.
Not to pull out my DC comic books here for a second, but he is of the water. So I will allow this as an aquatic
horror. I will say this. The movie in 82 was a horror, if you will, but I don't find the comic to be a horror.
But there's
some debatable science. It's definitely science fiction. Science fiction. But you know what? You were absolutely correct. Nonetheless, in fact, some of those mutations in the 82 film, when I was a kid and I saw that, I was like, are you kidding me? This is a lot of a 5-year-old.
Adrienne Barbeau had a very favorable mutation herself.
Oh, yeah. See, I was going to bring it up. I'm glad you brought it up, Henry, because I was going to bring it up. That was my favorite scene.
Yeah. So, long story short, too late. There's been a slew of aquatic horror in the mainstream cinema. Open Water, I believe, started as an indie film of sorts, made a fat splash and regenerated the cycle of aquatic horror, of the unknown underneath. And it spawned several sequels. I found it to be claustrophobically, if you can use that word.
Yeah.
Effective. It's worth looking to. It's almost like a Blair Witch quality, but not as big of a splash, no pun intended, right? Like when it first came out. So what on to the next. Can't talk about anything else but 47 meters down. Obviously, I don't know my camera cues. I actually enjoyed the second one, although this one paves the way. It's got some effective sequences, but I think Uncaged, the sequel, is better. So heads up. Moving forward.
Good information.
Yeah. I'm gonna just pad this out forever. Oh, there's more. Or did we kill it all?
It's like 3 a.m. We're like, oh my God.
I think you're getting cut off. I think they said there's another day. We're shutting down.
That's it. We got it all. I can't fucking believe it. Hey, love you all. Aquatic horror, that's the 101 right there. And I could literally do another segment and bore you to death with the ones that fell between the cracks.
Maybe Memorial Day before people go to the beach.
It was a great segment, and I loved having the guests. This is the first time we've had both of the guests in during this whole conversation, so it was great. So thank you, Anthony. You are awesome. Yeah. Let's hear it for him.
Good time.
Thanks, Holly. Thanks, Henry. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Danny. I appreciate it. Everybody behind the scenes. Carrie, Susanna, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you all.
Great show. You guys are great.
Where can they find you guys? Henry, where can they find you?
Oh, I love it when people go to YouTube and look up either the Henry's Kitchen or the Highwayman. Also on henryphillips.com, you can watch my comedy special, which was put out by Jash as well. There's a lot of stuff out there.
Nice.
You know, I visited Josh a handful of times. They threw some pretty good parties.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. Yeah.
That was one of the things that we did really well. You can find me on the social media platforms at JWWALLE for mostly industry related stuff. But if that interests you and intrigues you and you want to know more about, the world of digital media, follow and hit me up. I'm about to start up a weekly live stream D&D game set in the Star Wars universe over at our Twitch channel for a little online brand I co-founded called Whiskey and Waffles. We have a little bit of a YouTube channel, but we haven't uploaded a lot in a while. It's mostly a place where me and the co-founder sort of play around with the platform, but we started doing a lot of stuff on Twitch, and we're doing a tabletop RPG game. So if anyone's interested in watching, a bunch of nerds play in a Star Wars universe while probably over drinking, there is an incredibly ugly link that I'm sure everyone just memorized as it flashed on the screen.
John Carl?
We're going to have it.
He's the co-founder.
Okay. 7 ampersand H lowercase 4. Sure, I got this.
Question mark?
Yeah.
You don't know what HTML? Come on now.
Okay. Don't look up Waffles and Whiskey, because that's another guy, and fuck that guy.
That's a competitor. He doesn't do D&D.
He doesn't do D&D.
Point four, question mark. Bring it on.
He does.
Kevin's also a rule breaker for the army. All right, so we're going to have all – don't worry. We're going to have those links, folks, in the after the show. Just go to the YouTube, and we'll have the links under there. Anthony will be here every week. Kevin, thank you so much. You're fired. And I'm
about
kidding.
Time, Danny.
About time. You let him go. Finally.
I wanted to say this at the perfect time, and it's not going to work now. But you do look like an amphibian, Kevin.
Okay, I have one question, real quick, Danny. I know we got to wrap this up. What's behind you?
Oh, geez, dude. This is my old place in LA.
No. Is that a bike? What is that?
I was riding 20 miles a day for a while. It's a specialized bike, so
that's why you look as good as you do. I'm in quarantine.
I can tell you so many stories about how my feet, I couldn't get them out of the pedals and I fell on people's cars, but let's not do that. Let's end the show.
Next week.
Till next week, guys. Thank you so much for watching the show. Tell your friends and check out the links afterwards.
Good to see everybody. Thanks.
Nice to meet you. Hang tight. Yeah.
Great job, guys.
Nope. The